Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Clacks Women for Indie podcast. Well, what a week. We started off with a lot of things on our agenda, but as the week's gone on, the best laid schemes of mice and men gang afterglay. Of course, the issue behind all this is the coronavirus outbreak. The UK's approach seems to be some boy's own, take it on the chin, we'll thin the herd a bit and then we'll develop some kind of herd immunity, and does not fill me with any confidence whatsoever. Luckily, our First Minister is being altogether more statesmanlike. There is guidance on the ScotGov website if anybody seriously wants to look into it. First Minister got lots of criticism from the country next door for actually daring to speak to her people and tell us as quickly as she could and as clearly as she could the current health advice is. So as of today, it is if you have any symptoms, then stay at home and self-isolate for 7 days. Also, the First Minister has suggested a ban on any gatherings of more than 500 people, although it might have a slight impact on restricting the spread of infection. The main purpose of that is just sheer common sense to free up the emergency services people who would otherwise be engaged policing the match or the march or whatever the event was that would have been going ahead. So whilst it's disappointing to have events cancelled that you were looking forward to, like the Arbroath March and the Stornoway March and even our little Boulders and Blethers event, which should have been taking place today, these are all postponed. We can pick these up later. The important thing is that everybody stays well. I've been seeing some discussion online about, well, what could we do instead of the march in Arbroath? Some suggestions were, well, what about some mass leafleting? Other thoughts on that is that actually leaflets that somebody has touched going into every household round about you might be a good way of spreading infection if anybody happened to be ill. Another suggestion was for a mass Bridges for Indie event, which I think is actually a really good idea, because if you're on top of a cold, windy bridge in small groups, then some powerful virus to be able to withstand the howling wind that you get on the top of a bridge in Scotland in March. As far as Women for Indie Clacks goes, we're in close contact with each other. We've got WhatsApp groups, we've got our Facebook pages. Anybody who is either stuck at home or needs anything within our group, we absolutely will be rallying around. And I think that kind of approach in our own communities is probably a good approach. And again, this is consistent with the kind of country we want to build, one where we care for each other. So I think this is an opportunity for the whole of the Yes community to think about how can we help and support each other in a crisis and make sure as many of us as possible come through the other side. On a positive note, there were some events that planned for this week which did go ahead, and we thoroughly enjoyed our evening with Alan Bissett in Men Street. Lynn and I were guests on the daytime show at Indie Live Radio, which was fun with chatting with Val and Marlene. Independence Live and Indie Live Radio are doing a crowdfunder because they will only exist as long as we can support them. And I don't know about anybody else, but if it wasn't for Independence Live, I wouldn't even have heard of Women for Independence. I wouldn't have even seen or known about a lot of the marches and events. And I really would credit Independence Live with turning me from a supporter into an activist. When we're up against something like coronavirus and potentially people being isolated and having to stay in their homes, the wonderful thing about Indie Live Radio, it's on 24/7. It's got a chat function. If you feel the need to speak to other humans, there's just about all the shows are ones that can be done remotely and uploaded online. If anybody is able to support the Indie Live crowdfunder, please do so. You can get them on their Facebook page or on independencelive.net. On the podcast this week, we have an interview with Kim Nicol, who is a member of Stirling Women for Indie. She was on the National Women for Indie Council, and she also works for Women's Refuge. So, hope you enjoy. I'm here with Kim Nicol, and Kim is Sterling Wifey.
Yep.
Are you still national?
No, I just did that for 1 year. I wanted to try to build up more of the organisation in a local level. The Women for Independence organisation was more looking at like policy initiatives, whether it be on period poverty or the kind of things that women want on an agenda. I was more looking at it, how do women locally get themselves better organised to speak to their friends, neighbours and people in their community.
I do get the impression that they're more of a lobbying group.
Yes.
Kind of, is that right?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
I really like the arm's length thing that, you know, other than we're all under the banner of Women for Independence, you don't get any interference from the top.
No.
That sort of local network of women is quite powerful, isn't it?
Well, I think the other thing as well, I was a member of a political party, but I was thinking that today, not for something like 20 years. So I don't come from, I'm here to campaign for a particular election. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted, since I was about 15, independence for Scotland. I can do my thing anywhere. Literally, if I speak to my next door neighbour, that's as important than anywhere else, because mm-hmm. we need people all over the country. But how to achieve independence as one person at a time?
More powerful sometimes than speaking to a stranger, isn't it?
Well, these are sometimes the most frustrating conversations.
Yes.
Sterling Wi-Fi, still going, mm-hmm. still, you know, wanting to have that connection for women.
Yes.
I think it's really, really important. Going back to my time in politics, how difficult it was as a younger woman to be seen as anything other than some daft lassie. And the way that some people are unaware of their unconscious biases against women.
Some of them are aware of them and
well,
still care.
That's true. I was particularly thinking back to the time when the Labour Party, in the run-up to the Scottish Parliament, they were already looking at how do we address the low numbers of women in their ranks. Now, they had, without a doubt, very entrenched male structures. And while the Labour Party were coming up with the female-only selections, a lot of people in the SNP thought, no, we're not like them.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the women that we have. And so we don't need that kind of thing. And I think, me, that was an unconscious bias, because there was the Winnie Ewings or younger Nicola Sturgeon. There was a lot of very strong women at mm-hmm. the time, and so it was assumed there wasn't a problem. You look under the numbers, the idea that if you're good enough, you'll get to the top and it's nothing to do with your sex. That's not quite the case when you look at the numbers we're talking about. How do we address that if we do think that it's important for women's voices to be as heard as men's? If we want the kind of society that recognises the world of women as much as the world of men.
Yeah. And do you think that all women shortlists are the way to go then?
Yes, I do. To address the problem of underrepresentation.
Yeah. You've just made me remember something I thought was quite a useful way of reframing that. It's not that women are underrepresented, it's that men are overrepresented.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to correct.
Yeah.
Is there a better way of doing this that allows women to participate? Because the one thing we don't want is it only to be available to those who can physically get here there, because that then restricts your pool to people who don't represent full diversity of the community that they're serving.
Well, I think the fact that the whole thing of the Scottish Parliament was supposed to counter that. It's one thing to set up a structure, but if you haven't changed how people's lives are
exactly
led, it's not really addressing it.
No.
It's not that a man from WIC
mm-hmm.
is giving
it's
up his place. It's a woman.
Yeah.
It's not that a woman from Curlook with two young children is giving up her place. It's a woman that's doing it, not a man. And I think we sometimes overlook just how much being a woman imparts on your life. Until we achieve some sense of equality, then women are going to miss out. Because if our talented women are not in the parliament, are not in the boardroom, are not at the places of work, then
and
our lives are impacted by that.
The problem comes from the fact that women are still disproportionately responsible for the care.
Exactly.
That's the inequality.
Yes.
And just saying, yes. Well, this is open to a man or a woman completely yes. equally. Well, they're not completely equal from the starting point. So no. It's that you have to treat me differently in order to treat me equally.
Exactly. I don't know a huge amount about Scandinavian society, but I do know that they have things like paid paternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shared care within it for parents. Men are perhaps just as likely to pick up the wee one from nursery or take the wee one to school or be off if your child's sick from your work. There's a mindset that's changed in these places because they weren't that different from, you know, Scottish society in the past. And, you know, it's great to see whether it be dads going, you know, pushing prams or whatever, but it's almost as if men are given a medal because they change a nappy.
It's that I've done the dishes for you.
Yeah, I've done your dishes.
Having more women in the workplace coming up against these issues is a good thing, not for them at the time, but it's a good thing longer term because then we have to confront those issues because the only alternative is, okay, well, then we're going to carry on excluding you. And that is not going to be the right answer ever. What else have you been involved in?
I work for Women's Aid. I've worked in a refuge.
Oh, that must be very, very challenging.
Well, we get good support, which is crucial and important. It's great to celebrate the successes. And whether that be someone getting into a college course or getting a job or passing their driving test, or, you know, kids doing things at school and then you can see them out playing and enjoying themselves. There's a great deal of good, positive times.
Do you know, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because you kind of think of the worst case scenario of the battered, abused women and maybe children ending up it having to go to this place, leaving behind everything. And you don't then ever think, and they come out the other side. That's really important to know
Absolutely.
That there's positive ways out of it. So what kind of things help people get out of that
I think
situation?
If when people come to refuge, first of all, their life has been in a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And that crisis may have gone on for that person their whole life. And that can live with somebody for all their lives. And so perhaps the relationships they go into certainly are not supportive and good relationships. And that continues on the abuse that they've experienced. So so they've come to us at a moment of crisis and decided to get out. And we have fortunate enough to have a space available. Our properties are all in the old traditional four in a block, modern property, but set up that way. People know what that's like. So everybody has their own front door, has their own garden, you know, a secure place for their children to play in. So they have a place of safety. So it becomes, first of all, this is a place where it's safe. We have cameras and security, and we have staff. Our staff not there 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
We're available 24/7. So you have your own place. You can shut your own door and know nobody's coming in to interrupt that.
That's very important, isn't it? That sense of control over your own life.
Yeah, and some folks say it's the first time they've had a sleep in a long time. One of the wee insights we get with folk is we provide all the furnishings. Mm-hmm. And it's a badge of pride for myself and my colleagues that their furnishings are the best of quality that we can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And so anybody comes in, it's not the first time people have burst into tears when they've seen what they're coming into.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important for us that, you know, you can see this as a place where you're valued.
Yes, and their self-esteem is probably
absolutely.
At rock bottom when they come through the
door. It is. And then folk make it their own with pictures, drawings, furnishings.
And is that a long stay?
It can be, it can be. We talk about a sort of sweet point where you come in, but overwhelmed by it. How are you going to manage? How are you going to cope with all that's going on? There might be court cases you're having to deal with.
Of course.
All the medical complaints that various people have got. Fear and worry of being on your own. And then that settles down. Not always. Some people never quite get back on their feet, and that's got to be said. Find their feet again and start to they enjoy it being here. And then they think, oh, I want my own house now. And that's because that's the adult person really, you know, taking charge again.
Yeah.
And you know that it's a bit like your fledglings. It's time to leave the nest. In fact, the other day, one of our former residents came back to visit. She's looking fantastic. Job, car, new house, the lot, been on holiday, and that's great. And I'll tell you something else, as a women's aid worker, say when somebody finds a new partner, we celebrate that as well.
Do you check him out first?
Yes. If we get the chance. Uh-huh. Because, you know, so we won't do the person, but we'll say to them, so tell me about this new person in your life. Are they working? Are they with this? Are they that? And you know, we can have a laugh about them. And are they good to you? And that kind of thing. And that's really important.
Yes.
And really enjoy that because that's what you want.
Mm-hmm. Is there not some process whereby you can look up and see whether a person has been...
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's called Megan's Law. Something similar. If you have concerns, because, and here's a point, there are predatory people out there. Vast majority of them are men. Sometimes they're women, but vast majority are men. And they're looking to see, probe and test out, whether it be an online dating, or they might be a neighbour who happens to be in your area, or maybe picking up somebody from school. We can see, when we see all the historic child abuse cases, but the same people are operating today. They might be doing it a wee bit differently, but they're still doing that. If you meet someone and something about them makes you concerned about their behaviours, then you can go to the police and say, can you check and see if this person's on like a sex abuse register or something like that, or do they have a record of domestic abuse. What tends to happen is that you take up with someone and they're very nice, but some woman comes up to you, whether it be at the school gate, whether it be in a nightclub, whether it be to you on Facebook, and she says, I'm telling you now, he is bad news. She may at that point go on to say to you what that bad news is, and the number of women that say, no, he wouldn't do that. Or they might say to their partner, and they would say, oh, she's a nutcase. Me? I had to get rid of her. And so it happens again.
And it almost is putting the woman in the position of being the policeman, if you like, of being responsible for whether she ends up in that situation. And actually, it's the man doing the damage who's the guilty party.
Well, 110% of her such a
and
thing.
And yet, you know, even saying, oh, well, they could have asked, they could have checked the register. Well,
it's their own fault.
Yeah, and it's...
We victim blame, we women blame.
Yeah.
Society does this all the time, and we do know women are as bad to other women about blaming.
Yes.
The famous, you've made your bed, now lie in it.
Yes.
These are very difficult issues for women. And what I tend to see is, and I call them red flags, and I'll say to women, so when did you first get a wee red flag? And they go, oh, I don't know. I have to think about it. And they say, oh, when? I remember the time and such and such and such. There was an incident. It might have been early on in the relationship. Sadly, often abuse starts when a woman becomes pregnant. I think that would be the exact opposite, that somebody who is having your child, that you would then start to abuse them.
Or is it a rival, you know, taking the attention
and
she's thinking of somebody else and not you?
All of that. And so I say to them, what did you do at that point when you had the red flag? I just ignored it. Oh, I thought, it'll be okay. It'll get better. It won't happen again. It was just a one-off. He'd had a drink. He was under pressure. A lot of things at work. I could have been better. I don't think I should have said that. So women override their gut feeling. And so one of the things that we can, when women are in refuge, we've got that wee bit time to go, okay, so recognise you saw the problem. You knew the problem was there. But you decided you would put it to one side. For next time you're in a relationship or you meet somebody, don't ignore the red flag. Whatever that is for you, don't ignore it.
Yeah,
I'm not saying you walk away from that person at that time, but don't ignore it, because that you're not keeping yourself safe at that point. And obviously, if you've got children involved, there's an implication for their safety too. And sometimes things get so far down the line that folk at that point can't see a way out of
it. Yeah.
You know, so the courage that women have when they're at their very lowest to get out is amazing.
What advice would you give anybody? They're in a situation, they want to get out. How do they get in touch? How do they access your place?
Online is probably the easiest because most people nowadays have a smartphone that they can look things up. So if they look up Women's Aid, and then they'll get an option for a local group. And whatever, I think there's over 35, near 40 groups in Scotland. They run the length and breadth of the country. So up in Shetland, over the Western Isles, down to the borders, Dumfries and Galloway, and all the way in between. There's a thing called gaslighting. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I'm not sure I understand necessarily what the term is.
I think it comes from, there was a film back in the 30s, and I know because I've watched it, I can't remember the name of it. That's where the term gaslighting came from.
That's where it had come from.
Yeah. So it's a way that people have of making you think that it's your fault.
Yeah.
That you're to blame for whatever it is they're doing to you. And it happens whether it be your workplace, it could be a boss that gaslights you, or in a relationship or anything like that, where people use the power they have to make you think it's your fault.
Right.
And then you take it on because you believe it. And then people say, well, why didn't you leave? Well, you'd already taken it as your fault. Yeah, so it's a real bad one if somebody's got into your head that way. And you just can't make a decision because you've got out in the way of making decisions because every decision you ever took was wrong.
Do you know, just as you're saying that, I'm thinking, aren't there parallels between that and the independence referendum? And so you couldn't possibly manage on your own.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Look at all the decisions you make, and I think this is where the state broadcaster, and it's getting to the stage where it's gaslighting the nation.
Yes.
Because every programme they have, we're particularly on news and current affairs output, tells you how rubbish Scotland is, and to be Scottish is to be equated with being rubbish. Now, that's there and been done, I think, specifically.
Oh, and it's being done by our own as well. That's what I find infuriating. I mean, you look at Holyrood, Jackson Carlaw, he and Murdo Fraser's is terrible as well. They will run down our health services, our schools, everything else, in order to try and make a political point. But the point they're actually making is, and if you work in them, you're crap too, because it's your fault. And that's what a horrible thing to do to your own countrymen.
And they've been successful because it's then taken up by those who work in the media for foreign owners and the state broadcaster, who will then say, look how bad you are,
and it becomes you? It becomes the people accept it as fact because they've heard it often
That's
enough.
That's right. And it's sad because I did used to work in broadcasting house in the end up Pacific Quay up at Queen Margaret Drive, and one of the things that the BBC was, I felt so strongly about, it might not have been the most interesting or exciting, but it was always accurate. And I don't trust it now.
Yeah.
And its accuracy is gone for me. And it's getting to the point where it's gaslighting the nation. I'm not sure, not that I'm a great historian as far as what's happened in the island of Ireland, but I do know that before Home Rule, as it was being called then, that the Irish party representatives for the whole of the island, as it was undivided at that time, withdrew from Westminster and said, no, this is what we're looking to achieve. And they didn't play the Westminster game. A powerful statement to be making. I'm not saying, down that road to say, don't ever go.
Yeah.
Because there would be reasons where you might want to go for a vote, or you might want to go for a committee that you want to challenge whatever the Tories are up to. Absolutely. But come back to Scotland. Come back and campaign, link up with your fellow, whether it be councillors or activists or MSPs, to do the work that's needed here.
But do you not think the time to do that was the point at which they passed the bill, which for the first time trampled on Scots law? That was the point at which I think they should have gone, well, if we can't get democracy here, Scotland's rights and our legal system are not going to be respected, there's no point in us being here. And that could have made a really powerful point at the time, given that it's in relation to something that they're trying to negotiate with the EU.
Yep.
You would think they might have thought, you're now definitely not talking with the consent of any kind of cross-island support.
But they didn't,
they just carried on. And by doing that, it's like we were saying before, that becomes then okay to do that, because that was a red flag and they didn't do anything.
There you go.
No.
I sometimes thought we're in an abusive relationship.
Yes, exactly. And well, we're in a hostage situation right now.
Come to refuge. Wow. For a new life.
If only there was one. So on that note, thank you very much. That was a fabulous round the house discussion.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. I found it fascinating chatting to Kim, and it just struck me that the parallels between abusive relationships between men and women, but also the fact that we could see parallels with the independence question and Scotland's relationship with the rest of the UK. Now, the other event which I'd mentioned we'd been to was an evening of conversation with writer and playwright and poet Alan Bissett. And it was interesting that some of the discussion that evening was also around that very same theme of the relationship between Scotland in union with England. So I'm just going to play you a little bit of the discussion that from the evening with Alan. And this started off with a conversation about what options might be open to the Scottish Government in the absence of that Section 30 order being agreed. So here's what Alan's thoughts were on it.
The SNP run in 2021 for the Holyrood elections on a mandate of declaring negotiations open with the British government if they achieve a majority. And if they're open about that, and they say, well, we tried to do things by the book. We've tried to do things the way that they were done in 2014 when Cameron and Salmond signed the Edinburgh Agreement. We thought that was a precedent. We thought that was the established route. We've always been told that we're no prisoners in the Union and that the Scots can only be governed by consent. And now we're refusing that consent. And you're telling us it doesn't matter, we're trapped. We are now your prisoners. That is the situation. That's the reality. It's no union. It never was a union. It's always been a subjugation. They had a very good PR campaign to make us feel like Scotland was actually a valued member of the UK for so long as we were serviceable and so long as we were loyal. They were happy to maintain that fiction, but now they've dropped it. And they feel that they've got enough political capital in order to drop it. And it's clear that it's a subjugation. Because as much as they go on about being ruled by Brussels, they didn't say, well, we're going to have a referendum to decide whether or not we want to leave the EU. Brussels didn't go, no, you're not. No, that's not going to happen. So that's what a union looks like. When any member of it can leave voluntarily at any point, that's what a union is. When any member of any given union is disallowed from leaving, despite what the wishes are of their electorate, that's a subjugation. So that's the case that we can make now, and it doesn't sound silly to people anymore. So they could say, we're going to open negotiations for independence with the British government. The British government, obviously, would refuse that. I can't see how they're going to respect that mandate. Or they might give it one last heave in the hope that they can convert Scottish Labour. Now, I've not got a lot of time for Scottish Labour, but unfortunately, Scottish Labour could be key here. Because if we can start to win over them by an appeal to democracy, and the appeal should be, you don't have to support independence. You're quite within your rights to oppose independence. But if you want to call yourself Democrats, and you want to call yourself Socialists, and you want to call yourself anti-colonialists, all of which the people in Scottish Labour like to think of themselves as, then you should not oppose another referendum. And we're starting to see cracks in Scottish Labour. This is another thing that gives me hope. Neil Findlay, who's no somebody I ever thought at any time for the independence movement, started to say, this is untenable. We can't hold this line, because first of all, look what it's done to us. Because Labour were the outriders for the Tories during the 2014 referendum. They were the face of it. Tory money, Labour activists, that was the Better Together strategy. And they were quite happy with that. But they've seen where it's got them in Scotland now. They thought they had it with the surge under Corbyn, and they thought, oh, here we go, we're back. And then you get to 2019, they're doing again, and they're going to stay good. I can't see nuclear radiation after the fallout from a an atomic bomb dislodging Ian Murray for that scene. But the rest of them have had it. And they know it. And they know it. So that's when you're, I think there's going to start seeing some of the more switched on ones, and by that I didn't mean Jackie Bailey. Where do you start? James Kelly. You know, they will die in a ditch for the union. They absolutely will. They would quite happily destroy their own party to preserve the union, and they might have to. But I think the more sensible heads among them might start to say, look, we need to support another independence referendum. We need to support it taking place. And that would be progress. Because you then, that might start to feed into the UK Labour Party. And, oh God, who was it that came out with the one that said, well, Spain has shown how you deal with these nationalists. Like, whoa! Where you going with that one? Was it Nandi? But there was one of them. Which one was it? Rebecca Bailey Long? Who said, we should not oppose another referendum in Scotland. No, she's not going to become leader of the Labour Party. But the fact that somebody who was at least in contention for the leadership role recognised the peril that Labour are in Scotland, recognised the anti-democratic stance that they've taken, gives us hope that maybe Labour could be turned. What leverage that would have with the Tories, I don't know, probably not much, but it's something. It gives us more force, it gives us more weight, it gives us more moral authority. So what, in order to try and get those people on side, it's possible the SNP might say, well, we're going to run in 2021 on getting a majority. It gives us another mandate for a referendum without them declaring, you know, negotiations open. At some point, I fear that all options will be closed except a declaration of independence, which is not something I want. I'd love to stand here and punch the air and say, yes, let's get stuck into that and declare independence. Because that is also fraught with danger, because there's a possibility that the international community might not recognise it, which is what happened to Catalonia. Catalonia is not independent yet, you might have noticed. Yeah. By them yet, despite them declaring independence. But they've not made a lot of progress since then, and a lot of their leaders are in jail. What we're looking at here with the British government is a consolidation of power in the executive, away from Parliament and towards the government, and making sure that any of the checks and balances that have existed within the British parliamentary system are minimised, because Johnson now has fed in. The EU are off his back, Labour have been smashed, the Lib Dems have been smashed, the Remainers have been smashed, the SNP have been put back in their box and told that they can't have another referendum. Where's the opposition? There isn't one. Well, I mean, that is an unknown element. It remains to be seen what the coronavirus is going to do to the structure of things in the UK. I mean, Natalie's in lockdown. Nobody in Natalie's allowed to leave their house. We don't know how this is going to develop. I mean, there's also factors to consider, such as the colossal debt that the UK state is in. Colossal. The fact that all the problems with the economy and the financial system that led to the crash in 2008, none of them have been fixed. It's perfectly possible to imagine another financial crash. That's another variable in the mix. But for all these reasons, there's a consolidation of power with the government. So it's difficult to see who's going to be a threat to Boris Johnson. Even the moderates within the Tory party have been silenced. Essentially what's happened to Britain, and if you tried to make this case to undecideds or no voters in 2014, they'd have looked at you and shaken their heads, right? Mm-hmm. What's happened to the UK in the last 5 years is that it is now being ideologically puppeteered by Nigel Farage. He's won. He managed to turn the Tory party into UKIP. So what UKIP was when Farage was leading them is now the Tory party. And they are now the government with a majority. That's a future that many of us predicted, but fell on deaf ears. However, I think the very instability of Britain is what will mean the future remains unpredictable. Britain is a very unstable state financially. There's a widespread poverty, widespread disillusionment. Nobody has faith in the institutions of government, of the media, of the entire system. And I keep coming back to what I've read about the fall of the communist bloc. And if you'd spoken to people in February 89, do you think this is all going to collapse by the end of the year? They would have looked at you like you had two heads. Communism in the Eastern Bloc seemed impregnable and eternal and inevitable. And before you know it, one wee flimsy push, and that was it. There's a great video on YouTube of, I think it was in Hungary, the dictator, whoever it was, the dictator in Hungary. He's making a big speech to what looks like 80,000 people in the centre of the city. And he's coming out with all the platitudes, oh, together we will move forward as one people, we've decided to raise the wages of y'all by about 15 pence an hour. Oh, doesn't this show how wonderful we are? Well, you know, the band's playing and the flags are all waving. And he pauses. And way, way off in the distance, you can hear these shouts of discontent. And he looks and he peers off into the distance. And it gets louder. Comrades, comrades, please be quiet, I'm trying to speak. And it gets louder, and it gets louder. Something had kicked off in the crowd. Somebody had said something, and it had just spread. And then you see the Secret Service come up and whisper in his ear, and folk are darting back and forth. And you can see him suddenly start to lose all confidence and faith in what he's saying. And before you know it, they're getting whisked away. And that was the night communism fell. Now, at the start of that speech, I've written it's fine. At the end of that speech, over. And that's all it takes. Something like that. Some unpredictable spark. Some...
Black swan event.
Black swan event. There we are. Perfectly illustrated. Almost like a virus moving through the And we don't know what it's going to be yet, but Britain, despite its outward show of strength, Britain is frail, Britain is weak, Britain is on a life support system, Britain has almost no international allies left. And things could go very badly wrong for Britain very quickly, and you could find that the whole structure dissolves. Because right now, the four nations of Britain, rather than being one harmonious whole, that Johnson needs in order to make the British political project viable, they're grinding against each other like that. But long term, I can't see a future for Britain. I really can't. Short term, we've got a lot to talk about in terms of strategy as to how we get there. But we will get there. And we are getting there. We are getting there. The Scottish people are coming with us.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed all that. And thanks again to Oak Studio for their copyright-free music. Normally at this point, I would do a little bit about what's coming up for the week ahead. But to be honest, I have no idea what the week ahead is going to bring. There are some things on our calendar, but whether they will actually go ahead or not, it's impossible to say right now. So whatever, we will bring you some form of podcast, hopefully not from a bunker as I know and some fried rat next week. And in the meantime, take care, everybody. Wash your hands and stay well. And we'll catch you all later. Bye now.